We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Seth the Shadow Johnson. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. How's my prop comedy game this morning, guys?
I'm not convinced that you are you, Ben.
You can be anyone you want to be.
Well, we're vast. We contain multitudes. For anyone who sees this on video, I am rocking one of my favorite masks. This is an avatar that I use to do completely non-sketchy things. And today we're talking about something that people will tell you is completely non-sketchy. But for the purposes of today's episode, let me take off this mask real quick.
I have to ask, Ben, before we move on, are those blinks one-to-one with your actual blinks, or are they just on a set loop? I have to know.
For now, I have these on a set loop. If we could describe the mask for the people who are listening, this is a neat thing I found a while back. It's a LED mask that allows you to program any number of different symbols. Let's see what else I got here. It allows you to put in, like, now I've moved from just blinking eyes to one big creepy eye that is also sleepy. So let me take this off and let's do the show.
Ugh.
There it's okay, guys. It's me. I'm still here.
Like a fencing mask or something, or like one of those Squid Game masks.
Yes, and it's not a super comfortable fit. You can see the lines from where the mask was on my face.
Wow. Suffer for fashion, baby. Suffer for fashion.
Just as a reminder, as a framing for this episode, we are all talking to each other via our computers, and we are looking at video representations of one another, and we are not in the same place, and no physical presence here.
And our producer is in the Pacific Northwest.
And I have one of those filters on that makes it look like I've got really high cheekbones. This isn't actually me, guys. It's a facsimile. Yeah. I'm not actually this good looking.
Oh, no, don't beat yourself up. Well, look, we're living in a digital world now. And if you saw the title of today's episode, you probably heard the shiniest new term that's being thrown around Silicon Valley, the metaverse, not to be confused with the multiverse of various spiritual belief systems and most recently of the Marvel Universe. The metaverse is the next step in humanity's evolution online. You'll also hear it referred to as Web 3.0. Another antecedent would be the Internet of Things, where all your devices were connected in a larger online agglomeration. But very recently, everybody's favorite social media boogeyman, Facebook, came into the news with a very strange announcement. The company is changing its name. It's becoming part of something bigger. It's calling itself Meta, and it is a big proponent of this metaverse idea. It's evangelizing for it. But the question is, what is it exactly? Why should we care? And should you be afraid of what is certainly about to happen?
You know, when the announcement came that Facebook was going to rebrand, I was really hoping they were going to go with some version of Sweet Baby Ray's, you know, bring that into the family.
Yeah. It's weird that Mark hasn't bought that yet. Also, it's hilarious to me that a PR company spent millions of dollars trying to get Congress to call him Mark instead of Mr. Zuckerberg. Swing and a miss.
I wonder how much I wonder what the budget of that backyard barbecue video of his was. Like he probably spent millions just to make it look kind of boring and banal and like a regular backyard.
What price can you put on wholesomeness? You know, also, it's a shame because they clearly could have gone for a little bit of humor and rebranded to Facebutt. I don't think that's going to happen, but they didn't answer my email. So here are the facts. We're talking about the metaverse. We have to kind of dissect the term because, like any corporate initiative, there's going to be a lot of newfangled terminology, a lot of slick buzzwords. It's TED Talk style. It's pop science. You want to get people excited, and you don't want them to have to ask too many questions. Let me fix my cowlick here.
Your avatar looks great, Ben.
Oh, thank you.
I'm rocking a full like Lyle Lovett duck hairdo this morning.
And Matt, to reciprocate for that compliment, your avatar always looks awesome. Making my day.
You know it.
just to clarify terms real quick, I mean, a video facsimile, even if it is exactly you, is still an avatar, right?
Yeah, avatar is just a representation of you. So it depends on what you would consider a representation. If you wanted to go hardline with the definition, then anytime you are not physically in the same room with someone talking to them, you are communicating with their avatar. You could even say this about a phone call, because what you're hearing is a reproduction of someone's voice conveyed to you through another medium. So there's an audio avatar as well. As a matter of fact, while you're listening to this podcast, you are hearing three avatars. You are hearing our voices translated through several different platforms and mediums to get inside your ears.
You know, it's interesting. One of the other definitions of avatar comes from Hinduism and refers to a manifestation of a deity or released soul in bodily form on Earth, which obviously is, you know, what plays into that that cartoon series, Avatar: The Last Airbender. But in
an incarnation.
That's not that. It's just kind of a, like a high spiritual kind of definition of what we're talking about. You know, obviously it makes sense that they would have grabbed that term and sort of retrofitted it for the digital age.
There's also some deep roots in Gnosticism here. Mm. The idea of a life lived astride two realities, one of which is inherently flawed, but which one? shout out to all my fellow Gnosticism nerds. We can start a little more recently when we're defining the metaverse. There is a guy I've talked about before on the show. I'm a big, big fan of the author Neal Stephenson. Neal Stephenson has written so many great things, and you know, shout out Anathem, shout out, you know, Seven Eves, specifically shout out Snow Crash here. If you've played the game Cyberpunk, then you are accidentally already intimately familiar with the plot of Snow Crash. This also is going to be familiar to fans of role-playing games, tabletop games like Shadowrun, which is an amazing experience. In Snow Crash, where the term metaverse was first coined in English, it describes the metaverse is a 3D immersive virtual world that is populated by avatars of actual people, of meatbags. And it is a separate virtual universe, but it has real world effects. The real world exists, but it's going to hell in a handbasket. Private corporations have taken over all of the roles traditionally held by states, creating what we would in this age call a kind of anarcho-capitalism. For example, the CIA in this book, this is not a big spoiler, they have merged with the Library of Congress to form a for-profit entity with all the powers of the Congressional Library and all the powers of the CIA called the CIC. Read the book. Check it out. Not to get too LeVar Burton reading rainbow about it, but it's worth your time. And of course, people in this story, people still eat, they still sleep, they defecate, they reproduce, they do all their people things, but they spend a ton of time in this online world. And in this novel, in Snow Crash, that virtual reality system is mainstream. It's normalized. I was thinking about this, like in that book, it would be weird not to be on the metaverse. And if that sounds crazy, just imagine how weird it would be if you talked to someone today and they didn't have a phone, right? Yeah. A phone is not a human right. It's not something that everyone is assigned at birth yet, but it is incredibly rare in most densely populated parts of the world for someone not to have a mobile device.
Yes, Ben, you're absolutely correct. I would just expand it a little bit more to internet access. And we've talked about this over the course of our show. There are places in the world where internet access is still not possible, but there are private corporations attempting to make it accessible to everyone on the planet. But I do think existing in this real world without having access to the internet as it exists now is that weird thing, because so many parts of our lives are connected to the internet itself.
Yeah, and we're going to get into some quick statistics of that. It's important because we're looking at a hierarchy of requirements for you to exist online and for you to exist in the metaverse. First, access to electricity. Second, access to materials and gear. Third, access to time. Which is a huge resource people don't talk about as often as they should. And fourth, inclination. But inclination, as we know, can be manufactured by bad faith actors. We spent some time off air today talking about how hilarious targeted ad algorithms are. And those are meant to build that fourth requirement. Those are meant to build inclination. And our producer, Seth the Shadow, was talking to us about some just ridiculous ads. But check out our big data episode to learn the absurdity of that situation. You'll see the metaverse referenced in many other works of science fiction, not always using that name, of course. And, you know, Stevenson coined the term, but he was talking about something that people, not just sci-fi authors, have wondered about for a long, long time, right? A separate reality, one that can be altered in ways that are not possible in the analog world. A great example of another sci-fi series that references this is the book Ready Player One and its sequel, which a ton of the important events in that story take place in this online world. In fact, one of the characters, an avatar, almost in the Hindu sense, is themselves entirely located in that story's version of the metaverse. And then, of course, Matt, had to have this in there for you, man. One extreme version, an extremely unfriendly dystopian version of the metaverse, occurs in The Matrix.
I would say a metaphorical representation of it.
Well, I was thinking about this because in The Matrix, spoiler alert, you are being warned, 3, 2, 1, spoilers. In The Matrix, the metaverse, their analog, has assumed the role of the primary reality. And the entirety of the franchise, in a very brilliant way, is about discovering this other reality that has existed all along and has been subsumed by this digital realm. So back to our reality as it stands today. In October, Mark Zuckerberg, you know him. I don't know if I'd say you love him, but Mark Zuckerberg said that he is super on board with the metaverse. He doubled down. He said, I'm going to invest billions in this effort, probably, you know, even more than he did in that Sweet Baby Ray's bit. And to signal his sincerity here, he renamed his company Meta. This was funny, and this is also instructive for us and for the critics of Facebook, the critics of the metaverse entire, because we're talking about, like, this is the first example of considering consequences, the importance of doing so. Meta was already a thing. You know what I mean? Like, there were already multiple companies named Meta. You know, Noel, not to put you on the spot, but you have a DJ alias, Metas.
You know, I was waiting to roll it out, man. I was really going to make a big splash, a big debut. It was Metas, actually, and it was more my electronic kind of persona. But, man, Zuck you for taking this dream away from me.
Well, you still got it. We'll see who's left standing. And my money's on you. So the thing here is that Facebook not only didn't consider that other people exist and have other companies exist and have created companies called Meta, they also were sort of indemnified from the consequences, right? They, like, imagine being powerful enough that you could say, we're going to start a train company and we're going to call it Toyota. And then someone says, well, Toyota already exists and it is a vehicle company. And you say, fiddle-dee-dee, we'll just buy them. That's the reality Facebook lives in. And I think that's an important point to acknowledge. You have to remember, everybody lives in their own sort of individuated reality. And those realities are very different. So you could argue in a way that Mark Zuckerberg and his peers, which there are very few, are already existing in a new reality, in a kind of metaverse. And there's a ton of slick branding, you know, pop science stuff that you'll see out there. There are a lot of weird corporate terms, but the takeaway is this: if everything goes how Facebook and Microsoft and other large companies want it to go, there is a virtual version of you either already out there or on the way. We're going to get to why that's spooky in a bit. But let's pump the brakes. It's important to pump the brakes when we talk about these kind of things. You know, as you know, I personally am often hesitant to explore ongoing events. Like, we've been, just behind the scenes, folks, we've been planning an episode on Iran for years now. We just, you know, we're doing the same with Ukraine, with Kazakhstan. When you're talking about things in situ, in media res, as they are occurring, you have to realize that for now, predicting the future is an imperfect science. DARPA wants that to change.
And they're making scary headway in that regard. And predictive analytics are a huge thing. But the modern metaverse is a conversation that has a lot of scary stuff. It has a lot of misleading stuff. And it has a lot of like good faith arguments for why this will be a net benefit for humanity. But this is where we pump the brakes for the first time. If you're listening to this, you know that we love gaming, we love video games, tabletop games, you name it, card games, of course, shout out MTG. But if you're a gamer like us, you might hear about the idea of the metaverse, however defined, and you might say, hold on, I've already seen a metaverse. I've seen multiple metaverses, bro. I've seen Second Life. I've seen The Sims. I play Minecraft. You know, I've played any number of RPGs like Skyrim or Red Dead Redemption, Ghost of Tsushima. I'm naming ones we've talked about off air that we've played. So like, what's the big deal? It's already out there, right?
Feels a little meh to me, but that's the same thing I said when my friend Matt Riddle told me what Twitter was. I was like, oh, no one will ever. That's silly. That doesn't make any sense. No one will. That's too few characters to really communicate an idea properly. But he explained it. No, it's going to be about, you know, having kind of like a view into the daily lives of celebrities and of untouchable people. And that's going to be the selling point. And he was right. He usually is. He's the guy that also told me COVID was going to explode. I would be very interested to get his take on this. But to me, I remember from when I was like, oh, teenager, early preteen, I had, you know, everyone, I think we all had those friends who had the internet first or had like the best, you know, had laser disc player or had like the N64 or whatever. I had a friend who's had early internet, and they had this thing. It was called the Palace, and it was essentially these chat rooms where you would have a bad kind of cutout, you know, JPEG avatar that you could make. And it was all these people populated in these big spaces with flat 2D backgrounds. It was called the Palace. I haven't really thought about it ever since, but this had to have been in the 90s. So the concept is super ununique. What is unique is that it is like, you know, like you said, Ben, internet 3.0, which means that this is a way of literally stepping into the internet. So when you're occupying this space, it allows you to do all the things you would normally do on the internet, but much more experientially. You know, potentially, I don't know if you've tried this, you guys, but on those Oculuses, you can travel to Google Map locations just by, like, you know, using a voice command, and it'll place you there, and you can walk around there. So in theory, what this offers, if we wanted to think, like, you know, cool features, is that you could, like, teleport to other places and like be there and walk around. The more robust it gets and the more elaborate these scans of these places get, maybe we're in a place where this stuff is happening in real time and you can literally teleport to a facsimile or, you know, some avatar of a real place and interact with other people. That's interesting to me, but is it going to be this big, massive thing that everyone seems to be, you know, placing their bets on, especially Zuckerberg? I don't know. But there's obviously a motive for going all in to the degree that he's going all in. And I have a feeling it's not benevolence and, you know, thoughtfulness for the human race.
Right. If you want true control over a population, you want to control access. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to buy a room in the house. You want to buy the door. And that's where you charge people. There are these antecedents, but we have to be honest here. Most people have not played Minecraft. And when I say most people, I mean most of the almost 8 billion people in the world have not played Minecraft. How many know what it is? Probably a lot. But most people haven't played, you know, a specific video game. It would be really rare. And I'd be interested to see what the world's most popular video game is, like in number of players over time. But we can say something like Neal Stephenson's Metaverse is very much on the way. We mentioned statistics earlier, so let's kick this one. As of January 2021, I was able to find that 4.66 billion people are active on the internet. And that's a number that's recent enough that we could say it holds, like, it's probably the same today. It's probably actually grown a little bit, but as of this time last year, because we're recording this in January 2022, that 4.66 billion people, it works out to about 59.5% of humanity. So more than half of the global population is active online today, right now. And of that more than half of the population, the vast majority, around 90%+, are going online via mobile devices. The future of internet access is something that you take with you. It's not something that you travel to, right? We're bringing the mountain to you, to steal an old phrase. And this means that one of those first problems is already being addressed. When I talked about the hierarchy of requirements, one, you need electricity. Now, with a mobile device, you can go to a source of electricity and charge your phone, right? So you're no longer beholden to sitting next to a power source. But secondly, the gear is becoming normalized. And gear is where we see a lot of technology flop, or a lot of these initiatives kind of fall flat. So before we all start to freak out about the nature of reality and like, what's really going on, man, we have to acknowledge these basics. One, technology moves so quickly, and it is in a feedback loop, right? The breakthroughs and the innovations of these fields and related technologies are creating more breakthroughs and innovations, which create more breakthroughs and innovations, which go on and on and on until the house of cards falls and the nukes begin to fly. Two, technology has so many false starts. This is a little bit of a war story for us, but you guys remember 3D television? How that was like the hot thing?
No, I don't.
I do, but I mean, it was an absolute nothing. First of all, it's a dumb idea. It's not immersive enough. It's not taking it far enough. Like if you're in a theater and your whole field of view is occupied by the screen, that makes sense, but also I just think 3D is a dumb gimmick anyway, and who cares? But what an Oculus Rift does is it takes that to the next level and makes it much more versatile, and everything's designed with that in mind, and it can also incorporate 2D things into it, and it doesn't hurt your brain much. I mean, I find them pretty comfortable, and I don't really get eye fatigue with them. Do you? You guys have used them more than me.
Yes. Yes, I do. You get eye fatigue with it. But the good thing is it only has a 2.5 hour long battery life. So, you know, you can only get eye strain to a certain extent until you got to charge the baby up. I'm just to this point, Ben, I want to go back. Did you guys have a Sega Genesis?
Yes, that was my system. I was always a Sega guy. I had a Nintendo NES, and then I was Sega all the way until I got into PlayStation. But I never had like an N64, any of those next gen.
Let's stay in Sega Genesis time.
Yeah.
In 1993, Sega wanted to bring out virtual reality glasses in the same way that PlayStation has brought about their VR tech.
Nintendo did something as well.
Yeah, the Virtual Boy came out 2 years later in 95. So that you're talking about 1993, 1995, two major corporations attempted to bring virtual reality into the world. And just, you know, that was clearly a false start because Sega Genesis never got a VR system because it just didn't work out at the time.
Well, it's because of the gear. That's another part of it. Like you could even say like Neo Geo was a great game system, not VR, but it was a great game system. However, it was more expensive than other consoles. And this is why I think I love your pointing this out, because it is indicative of a larger trend. Powerful forces want this to happen and are going to keep trying to make it happen until it occurs. Shout out to everybody who just had that mental gif pop up. I can't remember what film it is where they're like, stop trying to make blah, blah, blah happen. It's not going to happen.
Fetch is the word that they're trying to make happen.
Yes.
I think it was Mean Girls, or it might have been Clueless. I sometimes conflate those two in my mind for some reason.
Well, I am down to watch a mashup called Clueless Mean Girls. I think that would be a rollicking good time.
Apparently a Mean Girls the musical, which I have found delightful and surprising, but it's apparently quite good.
Oh, I can't wait. So the interesting thing here is that in the cases we're talking about, Matt, what you're talking about with those early attempts at VR and gaming, and what we're talking about with those attempts at 3D TV, one of the primary reasons both of those things flopped, technological capabilities aside, is because it required people to get new gear. And that's going to be very important. It had a buy-in, right? And it had a buy-in on a specific non-multifunctional thing. The brilliant thing about smartphones, and love them or hate them, one thing the creators of smartphones did very well is they made the technology multifunctional. You know, now you're not dropping hundreds or even thousands of dollars on this thing that will let you play some games, or this thing that'll make, you know, your favorite celebrities pop a little closer to your face if you're standing at the exact right spot in the right distance.
Or, you know, make phone calls.
Right.
What? Right. What? We don't use them for that anymore, do we?
No, I would pay my phone company an extra $20 a month to say that the phone line was down.
But Ben, you've got that, those companies doing that, making the multifunctional piece of hardware, right? And then you've got other companies that are not related who will basically pay you to take their phone in a way, because they have these leasing situations where you buy a subscription with them essentially, right, to have service. And then your phone is not $800 or $1,200 anymore. It's only $67.99 every month.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. For like, you know, until you pay the phone off. Or, but then sometimes if you pay long enough, they'll roll it over into the next new model and you don't even have to pay off the other one. You can even just send it back. And then they either, I wonder what they do with all those kind of, they refurbish them and resell them, I imagine.
Yes.
But, because they do have to have an intact screen or whatever. But I'm actually due for one. But it is interesting the way they keep you in the ecosystem, and it requires cooperation between the service provider and the manufacturer, right?
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about. Ultimately, we're talking about team ups, possibly one of the largest corporate team ups that has ever occurred. I do want to point out that I recently got a new phone. I ran my other one into the ground. And I think everybody should keep a close eye on your phone bill, because these jokers tried to charge me $30. The phone company, and I didn't get the pay-as-you-go kind of model. I didn't, like, amortize the cost over, you know, 2 years or whatever. I just bought a phone with cash because I'm cartoonishly paranoid, and then they still charged me $30 for me buying a phone, which doesn't make sense. I'm going to call them after this. Anyway, the point is, right now, there's no universally accepted definition of a real world metaverse. And that's not because people are trying to keep it a secret. It's because this thing that everybody is talking about does not yet exist. So where does that leave us? Well, it means that venture capitalists, the forward thinkers of the world, the Silicon Valley poobahs, are all in a gold rush. They are clamoring to be the authority here, to be the one who tells you what the metaverse is, what it's going to be, and why you should either love it and adore it or be terrified and run from it.
And they want to do what you're talking about, Ben. They want to build the platform on which the entire thing is built.
Because it doesn't exist yet. It's essentially another internet. Like, it's not like this. This is a whole nother set of servers and infrastructure that will exist to serve this one purpose. And then I guess you would access the internet through this, like, other internet, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely on point there. Another example I would think of is, imagine before moving pictures, before film, the majority of visual media was still, right? It was either going to be, unless you were watching a show live on stage, you were looking at a photograph, a woodcut, a portrait, a sculpture, things that didn't move. This is like the move from still photo to video, to moving pictures. That's what's happening. It's more of the same. So if you liked the stuff that was before, if you liked, you know, like a text-based interface like Twitter or a still picture-based interface like Instagram, which is changing now because they want everybody to watch short videos, then if you like that, bully for you, because you're getting even more of it. If you hated it, if you had problems with what exists now, then, you know, you're going to hate this other stuff too. For our purposes today, there's a great, I don't know, a pretty solid definition that I found in a thing called the Metaverse Primer, written by a guy named Matthew Ball. Matthew Ball is, full disclosure, a venture capitalist, which I know is going to turn some people off. So it's, you know, is this like, are we reading a review of hen houses written by a fox? That's up to you. Here's his definition, though. And just to give you a heads up, folks, he describes this in utopian, pretty innocuous terms.
The metaverse is an expansive network of persistent, real-time, rendered 3D worlds.
Oh, Matt, I'm sorry. Soft note. You're so great with voices. Could you make this guy like a little bit more evil / ominous?
Oh,
like,
sure.
Not level 10 villain, sure. Maybe give him a 6 on the villain.
Sure. Okay. Real-time 3D worlds and simulations that support continuity of identity, objects, history, payments, and entitlements, and can be experienced synchronously by an effectively unlimited number of users, each with an individual sense of presence.
Wow. Wonderful.
That was about a 6.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You might have been pushing into 7 territory there at the end with the kind of moment.
You don't want to see a 7.
Don't handle a 7. God forbid an 8.
So neat, right?
It is neat. And just for a little. Like a flip side context from somebody who's more of an internet-y person. This guy, Mark Pettit, who works for Epic Games, which is the company that oversees Unreal Engine, which is like a 3D, everyone knows that. Like Unreal Engine is the 3D creation platform of choice for CG generation, for film, and for video games and all that. And IEEE, right? Isn't that how we say it? I think someone... It's IEEE. That's what it is.
That's it.
Someone wrote in and said, that's how you say it. I prefer I got that from Jonathan Strickland. Anywho, Mark Pettit, when asked, what is the metaverse? He says, it's a hard question. For me, it's the evolution of the internet as the fabric for our personal and professional lives. With the internet right now, you keep on scrolling through video. We believe that the metaverse will bring you into the era of interactive content where you have agency over the content and you can control it. You can interact with it. You can ultimately immerse yourself into the content and not just look at it through a small window. The foundation is real-time 3D media. Whether those elements got integrated into your existing environment through augmented reality or you immerse yourself with a virtual reality headset into the content, all of that is a consequence of the content being 3D and interactive.
Okay, yeah, and that makes sense too.
I'm Mr. Vankman.
Hey, Dr. Vankman.
I'm sorry.
He earned that honorific.
Oh,
yeah,
look
come
at
on,
paw. Look at the paw.
All right, we'll leave him. We'll leave this in. He's very into the metaverse. Seth, let us know if I need to move him if he's purring too loud.
he seems like he's having a good time. Can I add just really quick before
wait. If you are listening to this in podcast form, please go to YouTube right now.
You will see.
Ben's cat, Dr. Vankman, with both paws on his shoulder. And, it is the cutest thing that I've seen in a long time.
He's also staring daggers at the camera right now. Like he's
don't trust him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wanted to add that quote comes from a discussion on Spectrum about does the metaverse need to be open? In terms of neutral, not owned by a giant megalithic evil corporation. you know, or a non-evil corporation. Like, the idea is this is a thing we're building from scratch. We have things in place that make the internet open. It's like, you know, everyone gets access to the same internet. There's no, you know, magic premium internet, you know, and there were things that were coming down the pike that were maybe going to change that. But I don't believe they happened, to my understanding.
Yeah, that's another great debate. And when I say great, I don't mean great as in like awesome. I mean something that has immense significance. Yeah. Who will control the door? Who gets to enter this new reality? Is this as slick and fun and cool and progressive as the proponents and the proselytizers want us to believe? Not really, say the critics. Instead, they argue this metaverse has the potential to add very high octane fuel to the same problems humanity has always encountered, only this time you won't be able to unplug. What are we talking about? Should you fear the metaverse? We'll dive in after a word from our sponsors.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road, into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Here's where it gets crazy. Also, we don't know who those sponsor spots are, so how hilarious. Yep. If it will be something for the metaverse. The number one concern that you're going to hear a lot in popular media is not so much the metaverse itself, but it's the creators of the metaverse. Facebook ruins stuff. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's true. Facebook ruins stuff. Many of those anti-metaverse critics are specifically concerned because of Facebook's involvement. It's the same company that provably, knowingly did dirt with Cambridge Analytica. Check out that episode. It is the same company that bought out the Oculus VR system in its early days. This is a long-term play. This is not Mark just waking up. You know what I mean? Although I like to imagine him waking up in like a filthy room with a stained mattress on the floor and just bottles of half empty Sweet Baby Rays. Yes.
like weird, like rabbit ears TV with static on it on the floor, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Like, and of course he's in a tank top. And he says, we're going to do the metaverse. I'll announce it today. No. He's been thinking about this for a while. And people that he pays to be smarter than him, which is not an insult to him. He's a very smart guy. But people he pays to be smarter than him have also co-signed this, and they are making a huge financial push toward it. Oculus, the purchase of Oculus is evident there. And that was one of the things that turned me off when you and I were talking about Oculus, because you got one first. And I remember I got the box. And I had done no research. I was flying blind. And I saw Facebook branded on there.
Yeah, you asked me about it. And I was like, oh, no, they own it. It's theirs. You know, it was about logging in. You're like, do I need to create an Oculus account? I was like, no, bro, it's Facebook.
Yeah. So I made another burner Facebook account. That's how I got on it this morning. But this is also the same company that controversially builds ghost profiles of people who never started a Facebook account. They're playing the Kevin Bacon connection game that, you know, state surveillance also plays. What do we mean by ghost profile? Well, let's say our pal Seth the Shadow does not have a Facebook profile. Not only does he not have one now, he never started one, but he knows Matt and he knows Noel and he knows Ben, and those folks all have some kind of presence on there, and they have unknowingly granted this company access to other pieces of their online information. So Facebook can very easily say, these three guys have texted this person, or they have spoken with this person through some way, they've emailed them, etc. And they'll aggregate enough information that they can build a profile such that if Seth the Shadow has a change of heart and he creates a Facebook profile, it'll already be waiting. He won't have to build the car. He'll just have to hop in. Everything is already set up. As a matter of fact, his first three suggested friends are going to be Noel and Matt and someone like me.
And they'll also have his avatar pre-built because we posted pictures of Seth the Shadow. Right. On our Facebook profiles.
And if it's a new account, he won't have the same control over privacy that older accounts did. Like if you ever go to Facebook profiles and you notice you can't request someone as a friend or something like that, then it's because they were smart enough to opt out of some of the things that Facebook would later turn into prerequisites or mandates for a profile. So all to say, people don't trust Facebook. Makes sense. There are good reasons not to trust it. It is
the man
invasive.
Likes to smoke meats. Yeah. He's just like us. What's not to trust? Look into his weirdly enlarged eyes. They didn't always look like that. I'm not shade on anybody getting a little work done, but I felt like it was just like the guy kind of mutated into something else over time. Like he used to be a scrappy college kid, and now he's like, his neck is longer or something. Like something about his whole vibe has changed. I think he's been replaced by some sort of weird alien clone. That's my theory.
No, he's an avatar of Mark.
He's an avatar. There we go.
There is also no Mark, only Zool.
Yeah. Yes. Whenever I don't want to clown people on physical appearance or whatever, because everybody has their own story that they're living through. But whenever you see someone who is very wealthy and their appearance seems to change or evolve over time, you don't beat yourself up. Don't be like, hey, why is this guy a billionaire and in good shape? It's because they have a team of people they have hired to make their body that way. Not necessarily through surgery, but, you know, like the Marvel Universe does. It, you know, you have a dietitian, you have a nutritionist, you have a physical trainer, and they're each specialist in that field. So that is an advantage that they have. They are not doing all that work on their own.
How do they make your face more oblong? I don't understand that, bro. What's the workout for that? I don't know.
It's called a face whisperer.
Okay.
They just whisper at your face. It's from the same guy in Japan who invented the lickable computer screen. So we're just going to accept that one and yes and our way out of it. So Facebook does have a terrible track record. Whether you're a fan of it or whether you hate it, it does have a record of pushing boundaries and then bending laws and then later pulling a like, oh, hey, what's the big deal? Hey, Congress, what's the big deal? And that's it acts as though it was not aware of the problems it was creating or exacerbating. And is that a good faith argument? I would say probably not. But that's just my opinion.
No, I mean, Ben, you talk about all the people that are smarter than Zuckerberg, that he pays to be smarter than him. You don't have a company like that, an organization like that, where they don't know pretty much every in and out of the stuff they're doing and the ripples that they're making. Sometimes I think they just make the decision to keep doing it and exploiting it because it probably means more traffic for them. And then they're like, we'll deal with this when it comes to a head. And then they do sort of, or they make a sort of blanket PR, you know, acknowledgement of said problem, and then barely
have to testify
it.
In front of Congress.
Well, of course,
And talk about it.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. But I'm just saying, like, what came of that? I just felt like he was bulletproof in those proceedings, you know. And they make some good points. They ask him something along the lines of like, "Would you please tell us what hotel you stayed at last night?" He declined to do that. And then he said, "Could you please tell me the names of the last five people that you text messaged?" He goes, "No, I would not like to do that in this forum." He's like, "Well, I think you see the issue that I'm driving." I forget what lawmaker was questioning him in that, but that's kind of what we're talking about here. It's like, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. I just really quickly, guys, I want to send everyone over to YouTube. Check out Vice News System Error. It's a video called Why You Should Be Worried About Facebook's Metaverse. It's a fairly short video, but it really goes into detail these things we're speaking on right now, the reasons why Facebook may not be the best company to lead us all into the metaverse. And it really gives you the reasons that we're outlining right now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important to be aware of these reasons, and we don't want to be unfair to Facebook. That's not necessarily a hit piece. But these things are all true. They have been proven. And they're, in several cases, they're not necessarily illegal. Why? It's not because they're shiny examples of nobility and proper morals or ethics. It's because Facebook and the things that Facebook does are too big and too new in many cases to be regulated by existing systems. You can't write laws for things you don't understand, despite the careers of many politicians. So these criticisms of Facebook, they are valid, but they run the risk of missing a much bigger picture. And even Facebook is upfront about this, weirdly upfront about it. They see the metaverse as something bigger than Facebook. They call it an embodied internet, quote unquote, and they think it encompasses more than just a Facebook avatar. It's an agglomeration of multiple entities. One of the best examples of this for analogy is the global trade system. You've heard a lot about it during the pandemic. No one government built it. No one private entity built it. Multiple governments, multiple corporations, and some private powerful individuals created parts of it. And then those parts connected, and they form what we call the global supply chain. No one entity is in charge of the global supply chain. There are a ton of stakeholders. They often have contradictory goals, but the thing itself, the entire thing, exists. It is an entity, and it is an entity bigger than any of its one contributors. And that's what Facebook sees this idea of a metaverse as. They see it as like there is a Facebook land, there is a Twitter land, there is like your local government land. You know, you can go to the Fulton County Public Library, part of the metaverse, and you can sit there on your Oculus and you can read Les Mis or something like that. But this the difference, I would argue, with Facebook is that they don't want to be just a land that you visit. They want to be the owner of your avatar. So it's your Facebook avatar traveling to the Fulton County Public Library. It's your Facebook avatar that is waiting in virtual line at the DMV, which is still going to happen. It's hilarious. You'll be in your living room, but you're still going to like lose several hours trying to navigate the virtual DMV.
Sure. I have a question, though. I mean, it doesn't have to be Facebook. They could do it, take a big swing at it, and then if somebody else comes along and does a better job, then that's going to be the one that people gravitate towards. I don't see this as an all or nothing approach. It's building a new thing. Like, there's already this thing called Decentraland that is like a kind of a crypto you know, metaverse kind of space where people buy parcels of land, you know, that are NFTs, essentially, those non-fungible tokens that we all love so dearly. And it raised a whole lot of money. And it is like kind of this community. It's got like a shopping district. It looks like a Harajuku kind of vibe, you know, like Japan. It's got all of these different kind of areas. And it is kind of picking up a lot of steam. And it you know, there's a lot of world purchase opportunities and people can display their NFTs and galleries and all of that stuff. And it raised quite a bit of money. But my thing is like, yeah, Facebook, sure, this is what they're going after, but it doesn't mean that is the metaverse if it doesn't take off. Like somebody else can still do it if it doesn't exist yet, right?
Yes. Yeah. The odds are stacked against that newcomer, though. Just like politics, being an incumbent gives you an edge, right? So Facebook already has, as we've proven, Facebook has been building the infrastructure of this for some time. Don't ever confuse a public announcement with a new development, right? They're just going public. Yeah. But here's another danger. Like beyond Facebook, you make a great point. It doesn't have to be Facebook. It could be something else. It could potentially be the five of us on the show today, us three, and Seth and you listening at home, we could team up and we could just make a new thing. You know, we'll just call it a snow crash and somehow won't get sued. And then we could be the people who own the door, who own that avatar. But that's probably, I don't know. The odds are stacked against anybody who is not Facebook in a real way. But the bigger threat, other than, you know, whatever you might think about Facebook's rap sheet and its track record, the bigger threat is that real life, real life, non-metaverse life is going to continue. It has to for now, but it may become increasingly ancillary, increasingly like increasingly supplemental. Like people may be popping out of this virtual system just so they can eat, you know, they'll drink their Soylent or their Huel or whatever. They'll have a quick poop and then they'll be plugged back in. Actually, no, now that I think about it, no, we know humanity too well. You need to assume that when you meet people in the metaverse, in real life, they might be pooping. Yeah.
Well, I feel like the future of this is going to evolve into chairs that have a built-in toilet, so you don't ever have to get up, and some kind of drip, you know, solution. So you really can just kind of, you know, keep going. And the thing is,
Idiocracy. Like,
taken to the extreme.
Go away and baiting.
Taken to the extreme. You can see how kind of creepy and scary this stuff could be. We also know about, like, what do they call, Ben? I mention this all the time, and I can never remember what they're called. There's a subset of Japanese kind of gamer shut-ins.
Hikikomori.
That's the one. There's a really, if you're familiar with the music artist, sound like a grandpapa, Onatrix Point Never, he's got a music video that has a lot of footage or stills of these individuals, and it's really disturbing. There's like, you know, this sounds like I'm making a joke about nerds, but there's like Cheeto dust, you know, between the keys of the keyboard, and like just like trash everywhere, and it's like this really kind of squalor kind of situation. That's what happens when you're jacked in all the time and you don't take care of like life stuff and like business. You're gonna become atrophied and malnourished, and there are people that could get addicted to this experience and feel like they don't need anything else, and then we're gonna like, you know, the neighbors are gonna smell a funny smell like the cops are going to show up and there's going to be a body all atrophied like in Seven with a you know, VR helmet strapped on.
Definitely need some kind of in VR like warning. It's time to jack off. It's time to sorry.
Keep it. Sorry. No, we're keeping it.
No.
That's part of the next story, actually. We haven't gotten to the jack off, the metaverse jack off story.
Oh, boy.
I didn't.
I know, but it's just so funny. I'm let's reset. Yeah. Let's get our giggles
it's
out. True.
It's time to log off is what I meant.
There we
say.
Go. Yes. To unjack. Oh, that's not any better. So this is important because we now have bigger questions about everything we're mentioning leads to something else. That's the problem. This is a Byzantine situation. It's complex, it's a Gordian knot. And if you recall, the solution to the Gordian knot in the old story, it's a sword, sure. Right? It's not, oh, yeah. It's not to untangle this knot. It's to cut the thing and lose the rope to solve the problem. It's burning the village to save the village. And that is where we're getting to.
I always think of that Jeff Goldblum line from Jurassic Park. You spent so much time wondering if you could, you never stopped to think if you should.
And I do propose that people, if you're not familiar with the story of the Gordian knot, it's a quick read. Just check it out. And imagine how this might apply here in 2022. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We're going to return and we're going to talk about some of the things that even the critics aren't really mentioning as often as they should.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
And we're back. So we said the idea of real life becomes potentially more and more supplemental to the stuff you really want to do, to the place where your mind really lives. You're going to, like, there's a thing that happens with a lot of people in the game Tetris. If you play Tetris for a long time, you start to, your brain starts to keep playing it. Right. And I don't know if this guy has ever happened to you guys or anybody listening, but when you're really into a game like Tetris, you will, if you play for a number of hours over the course of several days, then you'll find your mind just sort of gaming out the concept of Tetris when you're idle. You know what I mean? You close your eyes, you're falling asleep, and all of a sudden, your last waking thought is, I'm waiting for that one long block. So I can get a Tetris. That just speaks to how efficient and beautifully designed the game is. But that same thing will happen here.
Can I say really quick? I've been playing a lot of Tetris lately, and I learned a thing. It's a game changer. You can reserve a piece in the newer versions where you can, like, you say you got a piece queued up, you can put that and save it and then recall it later. That's it's a game changing addition, literally. But God, I love, you're right. There's so few things have changed about that game because it's so elegantly designed that it just, like, stands the test of time.
Well, this is what I want to bring up, and I think it's related here, guys. The concept that I have a ton of work to do for my job. I have even more work I need to do here in my house for my life. The only thing I want to do when I've completed the time I need to spend on work is to go into one of these virtual worlds like Minecraft and build some stuff. And I already have that inside me, you know, and I'm in my late 30s. And I'm just imagining the younger generation that's coming along that's had cell phones the entire time they've been growing up, you know, these interactive screens that they can hang out with and do all kinds of endless things on. I'm imagining those minds interacting with whatever this metaverse truly becomes, right? The final version. And just what you're talking about there, Ben, the, like, pull of that because of the overwhelming nature of sometimes life and often life. And I'm horrified that, seriously, that kids and just, you know, once they become adults will spend most of their time inside that space.
Oh yeah. This is part of it. Okay. So this is what I really want to get to. This is what I hope, fellow conspiracy realists, I hope that when you are in conversations about this, whether you're talking to us about this episode, whether you're talking to your friends, your loved ones, whether you're talking to strangers in the metaverse, about the metaverse, why not? I hope you bring this point to the forefront. This is a new horizon of inequality. That's why mentioning the hierarchy of requirements, not to thrive in this new reality, to simply exist in it. That's why mentioning those requirements is so important. What happens when the bulk of your activity takes place online? You work online. You work remotely. That's what we call it now. How long before people just call it working? You know, your friendships are with people you have never met, but you know everything about them. You feel very close. This happens with gaming all the time. There's a reason that there's such a trope or a meme about having a friend say they'll be right back and they're logging off and you never hear about them again. And it's can be very sad and poignant. What happens with your romantic endeavors, right? What you meet the person that you are convinced is the love of your life. You think they're somewhere in Malaysia, but you're not sure because you only hang out in, you know, the Facebook chat room. And this also, another game changer up there with reserving a piece in Tetris, will be normalized haptic feedback gear. Which, of course,
that's cool to me.
Use for sex.
Sure it is, Noel. Of course it is cool to you.
Now, the haptic feedback, yes, of course, you can pornerize just about anything, but the haptic feedback stuff is fascinating for the implications, like in, you know, people with disabilities, for example. They're even like developing technology where you can literally do stuff with your mind, man.
Right. Like the guy who tweeted using the power of his brain, which we talked about in an earlier Strange News segment. Yeah, this, and I'm glad you brought this up for the potential to combat ableism. This could be a profound development, right? Now, people who could not travel to a place or could not interact with the world in a way they wanted to, they may well be able to. There is, to be clear, enormous potential here. But the potential is for good and is for evil. What happens in this world to the people who don't have access to this shiny new realm? What happens to the currently 40% or so of the people on the planet who don't have internet access? What happens to the people left behind? No one's really talking about that in corporate boardrooms. They're talking about how excited they are. And they're excited, once you get past all the PR terms, for the profit potential, because that's what corporations are built to do. They're not built to worry about who gets left behind in the wake.
Maybe the people that get left behind are ultimately the real winners, because they get, like, you know, the whole park to themselves. You know, and like, and everyone else is jacked into VR and then they're in their weird smelly apartments. And these people that like decided not to opt in are outside breathing fresh air. This also assumes we're not in a dystopian hellscape, which this would certainly help with. That's kind of what Ready Player One is all about, right? Like the world has become unlivable. Therefore, the only way to truly kind of experience joy is in this metaverse.
Yeah, it's true. And also, let me just point out again, I feel like I say this on a regular basis these days. Sesame credits started as an opt-in system. What's going to happen when you have to have some avatar to exist in the rest of the world? Like, you can't
go to the DMV, like you were
right,
saying.
Yeah, you can't drive. Well, cars will be driverless, et cetera. But like, you can't get on the train because you have to be able to pay a train ticket, and you can't buy the ticket without your avatar traveling to, you know, the New York City Metro Transit Authority and subscribing to the train service. You can't just show up with cash. That is going to happen. People are going to be left behind. And in their defense, in the defense of the ivory tower, as usual, same as it ever was, numerous academics have been raising red flags about this for a long, 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 long time, and they have been roundly ignored by private entities. The world's largest tech companies, Microsoft, Google, Apple, you name it, they are hurtling headlong into creating the metaverse. They are pouring money into it, and they are ignoring valid, serious concerns, and they are ignoring dangerous possibilities. Like, we can see again that clear potential for a new type of inequality. The unplugged person, right? They're at a disadvantage. They're like the non-genetically modified protagonist of Gattaca. Spoiler alert. We can also see that people are going to, I don't know, I read this great New York Times article that talks about, it gives us a specific example of what we're talking about earlier, which is that this will likely accelerate the same negative traits of humanity that have followed the species like a shadow since the first day. The New York Times piece, I just pulled an excerpt from this. It's a retelling of an unpleasant experience using Oculus. And to Matt's earlier point, you know, man, there are some great journalistic pieces of people just basically hanging out on an Oculus. And this New York Times piece is primarily about the future of harassment, because just as we know, reproductive urges and sexual desires drive a lot of new technology. People are going to, as soon as someone invents a shiny new toy, someone else is going to find a way to be a jerk about it or to use it to be a horrible person.
Well, it's coinciding with the younger audience or younger users who are maybe going through puberty at the time, which, you know, the biological process where a lot of those urges and thoughts and desires develop. And many of the people you'll encounter, as I have in attempting to use an Oculus 2 and go just try out various games and things, there are just younger people in there and they're being gross often. And honestly, it made me just take the thing off. I didn't really want to be in a lot of the places that I could access, at least currently through my Oculus, because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the exactly. And here's the example from New York Times. I want to introduce you to Chanel Siggins. Chanel Siggins is in her 20s at the time of this story, early 20s. And the quote goes, Siggins recently strapped on an Oculus Quest virtual reality headset to play her favorite shooter game, Population One. I haven't played it. Here are good things. Once she turned on the game, she maneuvered her avatar into a virtual lobby in the immersive digital world, aka the metaverse, and waited for the action to begin. As she waited, another player's avatar approached hers. Trigger warning, this is a little graphic. The stranger then simulated groping and ejaculating onto her avatar, said Siggins. She was shocked, and she asked the player, whose avatar presented as male, to stop doing that. You know what I mean? And then, per Siggins, he shrugged as if to say, I don't know what to tell you. It's the metaverse. I'll do what I want. And he just walked away. That's gonna continue happening because people do gross stuff, especially when they feel that there are no consequences. And there are not going to be consequences because the laws don't exist. The laws were built for an analog world and do not, therefore, have the scope now to fully comprehend and address the dangers of reality online.
And to be fair, I mean, you know, reality and the metaverse kind of mirror one another. I mean, that could just as likely have happened like in a subway station in New York City as in a digital thing with just as few consequences potentially if there's no cops around to catch the guy that did it. So we know things like that really do happen, and it's part of the gamble that you make when just going out into the world. Like, weird creeps are out there and things can happen. I would imagine there are probably safeguards, ideally in place for a larger metaverse kind of situation that would, you know, allow you to maybe not interact with certain people or have blinders on or whatever, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like there will be some equivalent of blocking, surely. But we don't know how it will work out because, again, the thing that people are trying to sell you right now doesn't exist. The pieces are there, right? It's like if you were going to buy a house, what you're seeing is a bunch of people standing in a yard saying, this house is going to be awesome. You should buy it. One, we own the door. And two, we haven't built it yet, right? So we've just built the door, but we have all the stuff we need. We've met our hierarchy of requirements.
And no inspections allowed. You cannot have an inspection.
Yeah, no. We have an FAQ. And that's that counts. But also don't read the terms of service.
Yeah. We also have an HOA.
We have an HOA. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry. Acronym.
And we have access to everything you've ever done.
Speaking of buying a house, I'm so sorry to keep going here.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the actual economy of the metaverse itself.
Yeah.
And
I mentioned Decentraland a little bit, which is sort of like a prototype for this, but where you can buy digital assets using a lot of this is going to be based on around blockchain.
That's exactly what I'm going to bring up. The emergence of blockchain, the popularity of blockchain, and the hype, specifically the hype by venture capitalists and other corporations that are trying to say, this is the new thing. These crypto coins, this is the new thing. It's real. It's awesome. You're going to love it. It's going to work. Combining that with Facebook and the metaverse and the ability to control an entire economy and currency. Like, think about the power that the United States wields and has had in its power because it controls the U.S. dollar and what that dollar is tied to. Combine those two things. I mean, there's real danger there, I think, for the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's again, the existing regimes, the existing legal structures have never had to think about this. You know what I mean? And those things take a long time with a lot of false starts, just like with any other kind of innovation. They take a long time, a lot of false starts to get something right. And they're almost certainly not going to get it right by the time they need to do so. These laws will be written after the fact. The equivalent of the people who will stop someone from assaulting some other person in the metaverse, they're going to come like years after they were needed. And I want to go back to something you brought up, guys. So just thought experiments. I know we're running long on this episode, but this stuff is very important. Let's say you are an internet native. That's what you were describing earlier, Matt. Someone who has grown up around screens, mobile screens, computer screens, television screens, you name it, anything but window screens, really, until window technology improves. Maybe you were born during the pandemic. And as a result of that, especially for anybody who had a kid in the past 2 years, your kid, the bulk of their interaction with the wider world has always been virtual. It is normal. They're growing up astride two increasingly separate realities: virtual jobs, virtual friends, virtual vacations. Is that inherently bad? No. No, we're not Luddites. We're not anti-technology, but we are asking important questions. What happens to those kids when the power goes out? What happens when the internet goes down? What happens when a coronal mass ejection blindsides part of the world? And everybody who is, dependent upon this new fabricated reality suddenly finds themselves outside, what was the old stick man line? Back to the basics, outside the matrix. Tank top, sweatpants, old A6. Yeah.
Nice. Well, that was very nice, Ben. But seriously, what happens when there's another viral infection or some kind of communicable disease that becomes a pandemic and spreads? The next one, the next 10. Mm-hmm. And it is way more dangerous to physically travel somewhere to do anything. Like exactly what we already experienced. We already know: a birthday, a holiday celebration, a New Year's Eve party, a concert, a comedy show, any of that. What happens when it's way more dangerous to do that than it is to go virtually to something?
Know what that feels like, man.
That's what I'm saying. And we've only gone through one. And what if the air quality gets worse and worse and worse, and it's physically dangerous to travel outside your door?
I think those kind of dystopian predictions figure largely into the buy-in by these massive corporations. I think they're looking at the big picture and the future, which is pretty bleak potentially, right?
Yep. And let's add to the fire a little bit. We'll give a slight reassurance at the end of today's episode, but to add to the fire, and this is something a lot of us in the audience today were waiting to hear. What happens when neural implants come into the game? Hands are going to be old school. You're going to be telling people two generations from now that you used to use your hands to type on a keyboard. And they're going to be like, wow, that's so quaint. Because the other goal of this, when I talk about making it impossible to unplug, the other goal of this is to bring the metaverse physically inside you, literally. That's what the Elon Musk of the world are planning to do. And that, again, has enormous potential because technology is amoral. It's not immoral. It has no inherent good or bad. Like a gun itself is not a villain, and neither is fire or a wheel. But the people who are lighting the fires and shooting the guns and rolling the wheels, that's historically the problem.
Hey, Grandpa, you used your eyes to look at a screen?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That to me, that blows my mind. That's because that's going to be weird.
I always think of that scene in Back to the Future 2 with little Elijah Wood, where Marty McFly goes into the retro, you know, 80s diner or whatever, and does his whole, like, you know, video game shoot 'em up kind of thing, and flips the gun around. And the kids goes, "You have to use your hands?" or something like that. Right. I always thought that was very interesting and very appropriate to this kind of conversation.
Okay, so now that we have scared the virtual pants out of everyone, and we didn't...
You
we
had
didn't
pants do... in you?
Yes, that's sorry, the next sorry. Thing, is the neural implants.
Pants implants.
Neural implants, yes. Now we can hopefully put a bit of reassurance your way. We can put a bit of salve on this cognitive wound. There is a good chance, there is a non-zero chance that this current push is just going to flop. It's just going to fall flat. And that's honestly, that's mainly because of the gear required. People will have to buy new stuff, right? And until that purchasing becomes normalized or subsidized, like our earlier point about the phone system in the US, it was a calculated move to get more people buying stuff, to enable them to buy things that they normally would not be able to afford and perhaps not inclined to buy into. But this
video game companies historically take a loss on their consoles,
right,
so that they can get you to buy the drug, which is the game.
Exactly.
Or the same way printer manufacturers take a loss on their printers because they know they're going to get you on the hook for life with their ink.
Just so. Yes, this is an old tactic and it's very effective. And the strategy for deploying the metaverse and getting you inside that door, it's going to mimic the same steps in what might be portrayed as a surprising way, but it's really not. Anyone who is acting like, "Oh, whoa, how'd this happen?" They either don't know what they're talking about or they're purposely misleading you. But this current push may fail, but the important part to remember is not that. The important part to remember is the current push is only the current push. If it does fail, it's not going to fail the way 3D television failed. It's going to fail the way that early soda companies failed. There's still going to be people who want to be Coke, who want to be Pepsi, and they will exist. The metaverse is on the way. So at this point, you know, we have to say, this episode, this concept is something we have to revisit because it is an ongoing event. It's unfolding. So the information we uncover this time next year may be radically different. It may indeed alter our collective opinion of this stuff. But right now, Matt, Noel, what do you guys think before we hand this off to our fellow conspiracy realists?
I'm distracted because Dr. Venkman is being adorable again in your screen.
Oh, you can see him?
Yeah.
He's like a living scarf at Dr. Yeah. Venkman. I don't know, man. I feel the same way about it as I did about Twitter, but then I was totally proven wrong about that. I think this is different because it's not, it is very similar to stuff we've seen. It's just kind of an escalation of it, and it really does require a buy-in. And we've seen, you know, attempts to get Oculuses and all of that stuff saturated, and it just hasn't happened. It's more like of a novelty. But you guys both have one, so you start to really feel that saturation when, like, everyone you know has the thing. And, you know, we're friends with a certain type of folks that are maybe a little more tech savvy and early adopters. By the way, I always think it's interesting that the word adoption is used when it comes to technology.
Yeah.
So maybe we're skewed a little bit, but I don't know. You're right. I mean, Facebook owns Oculus. They own, you know, they are now Meta. They obviously know something that we sort of know, maybe some things that we don't. So I don't know. It's a pretty big, bold choice for a company of that size to make without having the data to back up that it's going to be a success.
Yeah. Guys, I know we're going extra long. I just had to express a few things really fast, Ben.
Ooh, go for it.
This episode has filled me with existential dread, unlike many other episodes that we've done. There have been a few, such as coronal mass ejections. I had to, after researching and watching a bunch of stuff, I had to squeegee my mind a bit. I watched a YouTube video from Forgotten Shine Restoration, where the person restores a cleaver, but physically doesn't, goes through all the processes. Just to remind me that you can have physical, real-world skills and achieve something awesome like that just by learning how to do it in this plane and then actually physically doing it. Mm-hmm. Because I was just watching all the virtual stuff occurring, all the different achievements that are coming and all the excitement about this other place. It feels as though this is not a distraction necessarily, but almost Brave New World level drug kind of thing that we're going to have available to us. It will be everywhere. Everyone can get it if you want it, and everybody's going to want it because it's going to be so bad out here in this space that we have to go inside instead.
Subscribe to Soma. Yes. Brought to you by Illumination Global Unlimited, a subsidiary of Facebook.
Yeah. Sorry for actually, the downer. It's just really
no, like, it's true, man. And also, you know, we have to wrap today's episode, but we haven't even talked about the hardwired physiological cognitive limits of the human brain, of the architecture. You're not built for this. No one is. No one is built to be plugged in all the time. You know, you spend like a third of your life sleeping, right? Is there sleep in the metaverse? Does there have to be? And I say this as a guy who's clearly anti-sleep and has been for longer than people might expect. But at this point, we want to hand the torch, we want to hand the keys to the door to you. What is your take on the metaverse, folks? Do you agree with us that something like this is inevitable? Do you think it is overall a net positive? Do you think it is a good thing, a bad thing? What do you see playing out? What are some things that you think people need to consider as we move into this brave new digital world? We'd love to hear your take. We try to be easy to find online. I do want to point out, here's where it gets crazy. Our Facebook page, we were joking about this. We're like, oh yeah, that's right. At the end of this episode, we are still going to shout out Facebook. Our Facebook page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, is home to the largest concentration of your fellow conspiracy realists, the best mods in the business, all volunteers. Their opinions are their own. So shout out to you all. And if you want to be part of that, all you have to do is answer a question, name the host, give us a joke that makes us laugh. Hashtag no joke left behind. I'd like to especially shout out Jane W. Just popped on. And when asked to name the host, I thought you guys would appreciate this. Jane said Beastie Boy Ben, Metallica Matt, Slip not sure how to spell, Noel. And for the record, Jane did spell it correctly. So kudos to you, Jane.
There is a KN sound in, you know, Slipknot. And I do often get people thinking my name is spelled KNOLL, like the grassy one, you know? But that would just be cool. Anyone out there, let's just put this to bed. It's NOEL, okay? It's like Noel, but pronounced Noel.
And you can also find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. If you don't sip the social meds, especially after this episode. We get it. We totally get it. You could go analog and you can call us directly.
Yes, please call me. I will interact with you socially via the phone. We will. We all will. The number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname. Just helps with a little anonymity there. You have 3 minutes to say whatever you'd like. Bonus points if you can make us laugh. But if you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, consider instead sending us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season.
Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.